This session's going to be a discussion on the future of surgery. So I'd like to invite onto stage our two contributors. So firstly, to my left is Ian Hennessy. Ian is a consultant paediatric and neonatal surgeon at Alderhay Children's Hospital. He's also clinical director of innovation, which means he oversees the creation and exploitation of new medical technologies, something that Alderhay, I think, is pioneering better than anywhere else here in the UK in the health sector. To my further left is Bryn Davis from Proximy, who left, I gather, the safe haven of corporate business to dedicate his efforts to realising the goal of digital health technology startups.
In December, I had the opportunity to leave and work with Nadine Haram, who is one of the co-founders of Proximy. And you can see she's done a TED Talk in November, which discusses really how we can democratise surgery, how we can make surgery so much safer, because the expertise that's out there in the world is very concentrated. The surgeons are concentrated in geographic areas. And as a Lancet study came out, showed that over 5 billion, or just about 5 billion people, do not have access to safer surgery.
Well, maybe you should define what augmented reality is, because people will have maybe heard of virtual reality. Augmented reality.
Augmented reality is where you mix real world with that of technical or digital information over the top of it. Really, for us, it's how can you enable that to happen in real life, and how you can enable that to happen in the OR, in theatres. So how can you virtually transport an individual, a clinician, a surgeon, anywhere in the world, into theatre, into the operating room, to assist and collaborate with another clinician?
Ian, how exciting and how much of a difference will this make? I mean, as a surgeon, you know, this is a delicate job which requires such tremendous skill. And there are parts of the world where that expertise simply doesn't exist. We're talking about you helping carry out a procedure, you know, here in Liverpool, that's actually taking place where the patient is on a bed in Africa.
Actually, people go on about how skilled surgeons are, but you actually plateau pretty early in your manual dexterity skills. I mean, if I take a third-year trainee, their hands work really well, and you get some beautiful little surgeons at that stage, but what's difficult is the decision-making, and should I or shouldn't I cut that bit, or what procedure should I do here? And I still routinely will ask an older surgeon to come in, look over my shoulder and say, what do you think of this? I don't need them to do the operation. I don't need them to actually put any stitches in or anything like that. I just want, you know, someone with a bit of experience to go, what do you think I should do with that? That is really, I think, the essence of the augmented reality. They have the ability to see what the surgeon is seeing and then overlay on what I'm seeing and interact with me in a way to say, like, that bit. We forget how much information is in a hand gesture compared to just what's from sounds. It's interesting what your hand gestures actually convey. So to be able to be in the same operating room virtually or using augmented reality with one of my trainees would really save me a lot of time jumping into a car, driving down to the hospital. The potential for, even on a local scale, improving the quality of surgery. And more seriously, actually, on a national scale as well, because there are only about 200 paediatric surgeons in the country. And increasingly, we're finding that we're having to specialise and specialise and specialise down to these big centres, which means that people are having to drive enormous distances to be treated.
I think that's a really critical point, that this isn't something that we're looking at just in developing nations. Mm. This is something that's happening here, you know, here in the UK. And in all specialties, their ambition is to, you know, obviously get that surgery right the first time.
Okay, so this next question, funnily enough, we were just discussing this briefly before we came on stage. How do you make the NHS innovative?
One of the greatest challenges from a private side is identifying which NHS site may be interested in taking up that innovation. There was an article in the FT that came out a couple of weeks ago talking about how the advice to startups is not to go to the NHS. You know, some people call it the graveyard of startup technologies. Why would you go there? Because of those challenges. But then on the other hand, you look at what Ian's achieved over the past 4 or 5 years at Alderhay in terms of the Innovation Centre, and then partnering with someone like Ian to do that, you've got to find those like-minded individuals who are progressive to enable you to do that. And for me, that starts essentially at you know, undergraduate stage and medical student stage, and you know, shortly after that, where you have a culture of accepting innovation, a culture of embracing and understanding data, augmented reality, machine learning. So for me, it's a shift of how do you educate clinicians early enough to then be able to embrace that and then enjoy the benefits of it later on in their career.
Okay, we'll come to Alder Hey in a moment. But Bryn, I wanted to ask you, given what Ian said, you know, sort of you have the knowledge, you have the experience, but at some point a surgeon might start to be less steady, in which case is there, or is this so distant in the future, the possibility that robots would carry out, you know, robots who replaced us decades ago on factory production lines to make cars, I guess surgery is somewhat different.
Yes, I think...
Or maybe not.
Well, this is... sat next to a surgeon, so... but already there's robotics being used in surgery today. And so that's for fine motor skills in neurology, in prostate resection, etc. And there's examples where surgeons have used robotics remotely, so you don't even have to be where the robot is to enable you to do that. The critical part for me, whether they'll replace it, I think it's that decision-making process. There's the motor skills that can get finer and finer, the robotics can enable, but they're not making the decisions of a complication or if something changes or if there's a, you know, other factors that come into play as opposed to just that manual replacement element from the dexterity side.
So from the surgical robotics side of things, the problem with humans is that they don't read the manual when they get built. Right, and they come in all sorts of really weird configurations. You know, the anatomy textbooks are, you know, they're an average of 100 people. Robotics, it's not got that general AI ability to actually do the full operation beginning to end. Mm. So I think the first stage is augmenting our existing skills with our decision-making sat on top. And it's great because it's got motion scaling. So I can have it, my hand move this far. In real life, you know, the grasp only moves that far. So if we're working on something small, it's brilliant. And it can tune out my tremor, because everyone has a tremor. The robot can basically just null it out so that it's completely stable. And also, you can leave it. You can hold something, and then you can take the robotic control off it, and it'll just stay there holding it. And then you bring your third arm in. Yep. See, I don't have three arms.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it's pretty handy that way. But then the next level is semi-automating certain tasks, because there's some parts of the operation which are really boring. Like joining two bits of bell together. It'd be quite nice to hit autopilot at that point and go, just join that bit together. And currently what we use our trainees for that. We actually do that to pace ourselves as the consultant, because you give yourself a bit of brain space and a bit of time to have a bit of downtime while the trainee puts a certain part together. Once you've had enough robots watching enough people do operation, I think you will start to get some minor procedures and then more complicated procedures being done by robots. But I think you will follow that type of progression. It will be in many ways easy for us, because I think we'll just have to watch what happens with driverless cars and watch the governance behind that and the lawsuits and how that comes on, and then basically just copy it.
Okay, well, how about this? How easy is it for small business to hook up with the NHS for innovations? Again, it links to how do you change, you know, change culture.
Yeah, it is. It's not that easy. I think find your champion, find your innovator. You know, Ian's available, I'm sure, with 100 other things he's doing. But find your champion of who's going to be supportive of that. Look at what the problem is that you're solving. Is it a big enough problem that you're really trying to solve or trying to fix? Have a coherent story, and then start small and do some case studies that demonstrate the efficacy of what you're trying to do. And once you get to that stage, the interest then tends to blossom from there. And then it's about how you get funding for your business and how you scale.
Linked to augmented reality, of course, is virtual reality. And I've seen these demonstrations where you can sort of walk into an organ, even down at the molecular level, you can sort of walk into a sort of a folded protein. Presumably that's going to be more than just for training people in medicine and health and the life sciences. Will that be at some point, you know, not only with your hand pointing, but you can actually immerse yourself fully?
Yeah, we've done that. So we've got a virtual reality lab at our innovation hub, and we've created 3D models from CT and MRI data, which we then put into a gaming platform and then use virtual reality that you can explore it. So I've had our cardiac surgeon explain to me what was wrong with the inside of this child's heart, and then he's gone on to then operate on that heart. It's an incredible immersive environment to look around it. I mean, VR does have its problems in that it is very enclosing, and there's quite a lot of people who can't tolerate it sickness-wise. Mm. We took the same model and put it into an augmented reality environment, because we've got a partnership with Microsoft and Black Marble, another company that does augmented reality. And that was, I think, more impressive, the augmented reality representation of the anatomy and your ability to interact with it as well. Mm. So my feeling is that augmented reality is going to be the VHS to VR's Betamax. You know,
interesting that they're rival technologies in a sense.
You're talking about the future of surgery. Is it the future in 20 years' time, or is it the future tomorrow, next week, and next month, and next year? It needs to be accessible, so it needs to be affordable, therefore, for people to use, and it needs to be built in terms of the content needs to be built by the community. The community that use it will enrich that content. With the platform, with Proxmi in that sense, the community builds its own information and data structure on there. So the more they use it, the more they record, the richer it gets. And then we get to the question of what do we do with all that data that we've accumulated over that period of time and how we can apply that moving forward.
Maybe we should come to this question. We've put it off long enough. Ian, what innovation are you most proud of at Alderhay? It doesn't have to be augmented or virtual reality.
Technologically, AI and our AI program is the one which I'm most happy with, because that was incredibly difficult, and we've got a great partnership now with the Hartree Centre and IBM. So our AI chatbot for helping kids come into the hospital. But the one that brings the biggest smile to my face is the partnership we did with a theme park in London, where we created a children's hospital within the theme park where the children can play at being doctors and nurses. And it's got its own operating theatre, it's got a neonatal ward in it, and it's got an emergency department in it, and they get taught the correct way to do CPR, the correct first aid, how to look after babies, the importance of organ transplant. 30,000 kids go through that every month, and I just love that, because it cost us nothing, and all it required is us to give them help to make it a really immersive environment for the kids.
Bryn, maybe you can address this next question. Is the UK leading the way? If not, who are the other big players and innovators?
The Dutch hospitals are very accessible in terms of being innovative in the way they think. And then we see the classic West Coast and US and Boston in particular around AR, VR in terms of technology that we see.
Boston's a big inspiration for us as well. I went on a visit at the start of our innovation hub, which 4 years ago, to Boston to see how they did it. They've been there, they've done it, they've got that maturity to their system. Mm-hmm. And also they have so much venture capital as well, raining on their hospitals.
£6 billion was invested last year in venture capitalists in health techs alone. There's £2.5 billion in Q1 this year. And a lot of it's going to Boston and around that space. So. Mm-hmm.
Israel as well. A lot of really good stuff seems to come out of Israel.
Yes, yes.
Exciting times. Well, I think we will bring this session to an end. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in thanking Ian Hennessy and Bryn Davis.
Thank you very much. Thank you.